read something to you. This is an adult group in here. And years I've been fussing, you know, mean old Pastor Huff. I've been fussing about the Abercrombie and Fitch and their catalog because it's filthy. And I don't know, to me, if you're going to advertise something that's filthy, it's like saying you condone it, you agree with it, you believe in it. If what I'm about to read is going to make you uncomfortable, then you really ought to be uncomfortable with your children wearing clothes from there. But this is an article by Art Moore, WorldNet Daily. After a recent national boycott campaign against Abercrombie & Fitch, the youth clothing giant has announced it will permanently cease publication of its quarterly catalog, critics called outright pornographic. Founded in 1892, the company operates 641 stores in the U.S., including Abercrombie Kids and Hollister Company, which it introduced in 2000. The catalog began its racy approach to marketing in 1998. An order by the Michigan Attorney General in 1999, citing a state law barring disseminating, exhibiting, and displaying sexually explicit matter to minors, forced Abercrombie to limit its sale to people 18 and over and require ID. In the Christmas issue, the slipcover says, offers 280 pages of moose, ice hockey, chivalry, group sex, and more. One article says, I'm pretty raw, but I can't read this. There's this next paragraph here. What one of the articles talks about, downright blasphemous stuff about Jesus as a 12-year-old. Deliberating over whether or not he should masturbate. I mean, this is in the catalog for Abercrombie & Fitch. In another interview, Sari Locker, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Sex, says, college is the time when you have the greatest opportunity to have sex and the highest number of potential sexual partners. This year's issue also includes a sexpertise column that says kids going to college shouldn't be looking for someone to marry. Rather, they should be focused on getting experience. The sexpert employed by Abercrombie offers advice on sex for three. Tells readers it's okay to go down on a date at the movies just so long as you do not disturb those around you. The next paragraph, I can't even read that. 300 calls per hour. I mean, I can read it, but I'm not even comfortable reading it out loud to you. It's worse than what I've already mentioned. 300 calls per hour. After a national boycott led by the National Coalition for the Protection of Children and Families, Abercrombie pulled its Christmas issue off the catalog from stores at the beginning of Thanksgiving week. The company has received more than 300 calls per hour from people declaring they would boycott the store until it stops selling the quarterly. An employee told National Review Anna Ann Morris, when asked who was behind the boycott, the employee said, "Ever hear of Dr. Dobson?" James Dobson, a Colorado-based focus on the family, addressed the issue in his daily radio program, joined with Cubasex, National Coalition for the Protection of Children and Families, and others in the protest. And then there's a recommendation to read this other article. But, some people say, "Well, I don't know what he is. Why is he so mean? Where we spent the money on the show?" It's filth. I mean, it's promoting unbelievably, heinously blasphemous stuff, you know. And it's a shame that neo-evangelicals will protest the thing and fundamental Baptist kids will wear it with their parents' approval. That ain't right. Just isn't right. You know, and it's my job to not say anything about it because I might offend somebody or hurt their feelings. Okay, we're talking about God and government. And we've already prayed before the Sunday school hour. So the five things we were talking about that we began a couple weeks ago. We began talking about God and government a couple weeks ago. And last week we started talking about five components of government, maybe for lack of a better thing to call it. But five things that all governments involve. If it's part of government, it has these things. First of all, is sovereignty. We talked about that last time. I'm not going to reiterate everything about sovereignty, but sovereignty is the presumption or the right to rule. And it's either assumed or legitimate. But there is such a thing as sovereignty. There's a claim to sovereignty. And someone says, I have power, I have the right, I have the privilege or the prerogative of dictating here, or regulating here, or controlling, or restraining here. And that's granted by God. It's always vested. It's never intrinsic. It's always vested because only God has ultimate sovereignty. But He delegates authority to institutions and people who are in charge of those institutions. They have authority vested by God. The second thing we talked about was representation. And no, we didn't talk about representation. All we talked about was sovereignty. Legitimate authority to rule. And representation is the next of these five things. There are five things are sovereignty, representation, law, jurisdiction, and continuity. But this morning we'll talk about representation. And we'll look at some verses in just a little bit, but just to kind of lead into it. All governments are supposed to be representative. In some sense, they all are. Because there's always accountability to the rule of another. And if there's not some sort of accountability, then it's dictatorship, it's totalitarian, it's despotic. But legitimately, governments are supposed to represent the authority of a superior. That is, no earthly government, no single earthly government can claim to be the government independent of God or other governments. And if the state, if Washington or Springfield claims absolute, total, complete sovereignty, then they're in error. They're in presumption. They're taking upon themselves authority that is not legitimate. And they're not representing anybody but their own interests. Every person, every institution, and that includes civil government, has to answer to somebody because those who rule are supposed to represent a superior sovereign. For example, children are supposed to be subject to parents because the parents are supposed to represent God and are accountable to God for how they raise their children. And we spent a long time on those matters recently. And, you know, the role of the parent and the parent's legitimate authority. Why does the child submit to parents? Why? Because the parent represents God to the child in authority. Students are supposed to be subject to teachers. Why? Well, you've heard the term in loco parentis, right? When the parent turns the student over to the teacher, the teacher has authority vested in them by the state, by the school board? No, by the parent. Now, that's the only legitimate concept. Now, I know a lot of people think otherwise because they're conditioned to think that. And the educational establishment gives them that idea. That somehow the teacher has authority vested in them by whoever appointed them or whoever hired them. No. Wait a minute. No. The child belongs to the parent. And if the parent turns the child over to a teacher, that teacher's authority is in loco parentis. Not in loco, in place of or in instead of somebody down in Springfield or somebody in Washington, the national education administration or whatever it is. No, there it's in loco parentis. You're there. You're trusted by the parent with the child. And that goes for Sunday school teachers and Christian school teachers just as much as it does for teachers in state institutions. So the student is supposed to be subject to the teacher because of the authority of the state? No, because of the authority of the parent. And the one that the teacher should be giving account to is not the state, it is the parent. Over the years, when public education began, it was more like a community school rather than a state school. And the people in the community had a much greater degree of say and control over what was taught and who was teaching. And you understand, you didn't have school boards making those decisions. You had, well, maybe you did, but people were a lot more aware of who was who and what was what and what was going on when you hired a school marm from out east and she came in on a stagecoach and taught all the kids in the community in a one-room schoolhouse. They had rules of conduct, very strict rules of conduct for those people. They were expected to live up to a particular standard. Why? Because they didn't want a bad example standing up in front of their children. They wanted somebody who would be morally exemplary standing up in front of their children. And so they had rules of conduct. And they were very closely scrutinized to make sure that those standards were being upheld. And so ultimately, you see, the school board is supposed to be accountable to the parents. But are they? No, the school board is accountable, for the most part, to the teachers' union. You know, and it's kind of a sewed up, interestingly you know, kind of an airtight kind of thing, and they have PTA meetings, but there's very little influence coming through from the parents. There's some, but again, it's less and less all the time. Why? Because of the overarching, encroaching concept of the state being the only government. And when the state doesn't really like to recognize parental authority and prefers its own authority and wants to only expand its authority, they do everything they can, whether overtly or covertly, secretly or openly, they do what they can to try and restrict the power of the parents and enlarge their own. Where they get the children younger and younger and the parents have less and less to say about what the children are being taught. And now if you protest anything that's being taught, you're met with indignation from the school board and the NEA. What right do you have to tell us what we can teach your children? So there's this idea again of presumption of sovereignty here in an area where it doesn't belong. And again, that goes for Christian schools too. You know, the audacity and the arrogance of Christian schools isn't, thank God they're teaching something better and they're doing a better job at it, but they're just as audacious and just as arrogant. They think the kid belongs to them. Question what they're doing and tell me who they think the child belongs to. Measure their reaction and see who they really think the child belongs to. And so, you know, again, it's a tendency. I mean, every institution of government wants to enlarge itself, wants to take authority from every other institution. Anyway, somebody is supposed to be represented here. The parents represent God to the child. The student represents the parent to the child, or supposed to. Employees and employers, they have a relationship. And you know who the employee, or excuse me, the employer is supposed to represent? In a free enterprise system, the employer is supposed to represent the consumer. Because in a free enterprise economy, a demand economy rather than a command economy, guess who's sovereign? Yeah, right. The Department of Price Regulation? No, this is the consumer is sovereign. If you don't want to buy gas at Amoco, you go to Shell. You don't want to buy at Shell or Amoco, you go to Speedway or Mobile. You don't like Walmart, you go to Target or Meijer's Jiffy Acres, you know? They're building one of those over here. It's an appealing store. I got to give it credit, but you'll be at a better price at Walmart. But then everything in Walmart's made in China. So it's funny. What's funny to me is to go to a Walmart store in Detroit. And all these American cars parked in the parking lot with bumper stickers that say "Real Americans Buy American," and they're all in a Walmart parking lot. And everything that all the jeans and the electronics and everything else are buying made outside of this country. Real Americans buy American cars, because we build the car. Who cares about the rest of it? We buy the cheapest thing at the best price, just like everybody else does, but on the cars. So you can buy American. And they have a right to put that bumper sticker on their car, by the way. But it's just a little silly to me. It doesn't seem to be consistent. But anyway, the employer is supposed to represent the consumer to the employee. It's not the employer is the owner of the company is going to prosper if he provides a good product or a good service at a good price. And that's the idea. You provide a good product and or a good service at a good price to the consumer, and the consumer will come to where you are because they can. They don't have to go somewhere else. Nobody's dictating that to them that they have to buy from this person or have to use this guy as the one who's their service provider. Prevents monopolies. Employees to employ. Citizens to magistrates. Again, we don't like this. I don't like this at all. Absolutely. I don't like this at all. But Romans 13, whether you like it or not, does declare that the magistrate is the minister of God to thee for good. Now again, they've, for the most part, are utterly failing in that capacity. But I still have an obligation to obey them to an extent. Whatever extent they tell me, we want you to do this, we want you to do that. As long as God doesn't tell me to do the opposite, then I got to obey Him. If God tells me to do the opposite, then I have to obey God instead of them. Forget them, I'll obey God. But their authority is legitimate. Anyway, and Exodus chapter 18, verse number 21. I don't know if we looked at that last time. I don't think we did, but let's just start turning to some scriptures now because it's about time we got some of these things lined up under the Bible. Exodus chapter 18. And verse number 21. Now this is where Jethro, you know, he's the one that could eat a whole 5-gallon bucket full of cornflakes for breakfast. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, tells him how to ease the burden of trying to judge every affair in Israel at one time. And verse 17, Moses' father-in-law said unto him, "The thing that thou doest is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away, both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice. I'll give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God, and thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens." I'm not hiding from the vegetables. I'm just looking for my glasses. I had to bring a lot of stuff up on the platform today. Now, does that remind you of any place in the New Testament? Verse 21. I mean, can you think of a passage in the New Testament that has a similar kind of a purpose to it? Yeah, that would be one. That would be one. There's another one. If you heard what he said, Acts 6, that ought to trigger the rest of it. I think I heard Kim start to say it. Yeah, that's another one. That's Matthew chapter 8. I'm surprised nobody thought of the other one. How about 1 Timothy chapter 3? Right? Pardon me? Yeah, well, a bishop and deacons, 1 Timothy 3 or Titus chapter 1, either one of those. Because what is it? Qualifications for what? Yeah, and for rule. I mean, right? Qualifications for rule. Qualifications for leadership. Now look at it again. Exodus chapter... I'm going to switch over to this Bible here because this one doesn't have these notes all in it yet. But Exodus chapter 18, verse number 21, "Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness." That's kind of reduced into four requirements rather than the more specific details given in 1 Timothy or Titus. And it's less requirements than given in Acts chapter 6. But the ones in Acts chapter 6, again, you know, they suggest a lot of subheadings. Right? I mean, men of good report, filled with the Holy Ghost. You know, we could probably be creative and come up with a lot of subheadings under of good report and filled with the Holy Ghost. There's a lot of things that would fit under that we would be able to say, yes, that's a legitimate thing to look for. It's just a way of summarizing it. Paul gives more details in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1. And Moses, here in Exodus chapter 18, gives four specifics. Again, and these are generalities, but Abel. Okay, well, if they're not able to rule, they don't belong there, right? I mean, if they just don't have any leadership, they don't have any of the necessary aptitude, well, then they don't belong there. "More thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God." You know, and you define fearing God elsewhere. It's not going to give every last detail, but we can define the fear of God from the Bible elsewhere. "Men of truth." Okay, so they can in the first place, they can tell the difference between truth and error. You know, I mean, some people really can't. I mean, really, they don't know a lie when they're hearing it. You know, they're gullible. I mean, they actually, you know, there's people, I think, that are decent people. I mean, they're honestly decent people, but they believe everything that they hear on ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, or, you know, CNN. They believe that. They think they're hearing the truth. Men of truth, hating covetousness. Now, again, why is that? Well, because if they hate covetousness, then they won't take bribes. Because these are men who are going to be in judicial positions. And you don't want judges that will take bribes. You know, did you read the papers at all this week? I was amazed. I was astonished. I was utterly taken off my equilibrium to find out that there was corruption in Chicago politics. I mean, the very idea. Who thought? I thought all that ended when Al Capone, you know, went to prison or all the corruptness. Just those trucks, you know, guys just being the companies being hired so for guys just park their truck on a site and sit there all day long, you know, millions of dollars going into that program. Imagine that, Mayor Daley. Seems like such a nice guy. And place them and place such over them to be what? Rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. We call that decentralization. You want to decentralize as much as possible. Again, you can get down to where you get the pecking order to, you know, one person over one person. I mean, there's no need to get that fine, but you know, one person responsible for 10, and then one person responsible for 10 groups of 10, and then another person responsible for 10 groups of 100, and another person responsible for the rest of it. Well, isn't that? We go up there, one over rulers over thousands, yeah, or 10 groups of 100, and then Moses over all that. Okay. So you know, everybody's accountable in some kind of a hierarchy, and the guy who's over 10 reports to the guy who's over 100, and the guy who's over 100 reports to the guy who's over 1,000, and the guy who's over 1,000 reports to Moses. You know, and if it can't be handled at the 1 over 10 level, it goes to the 1 over 100 level. And if it can't be handled at that level, it goes to the 1 over 1,000 level. And if it can't be handled at that level, then it goes to Moses. That's called decentralization. Now, again, you understand we're in the last days, and the spirit of this day is conglomeration. Just like it was in Genesis chapter 10, the Tower of Babel, getting everything under one centralized authority. That's the spirit of today. And so everybody's looking for the federal government to take care of their stuff for them. And the more they trust the government to take care of their business, the less sovereignty they have. Because power flows in the direction of those who are willing to take responsibility. Power and authority flow in the direction of those who are willing to take responsibility. And if the government is willing to take responsibility for your health care, you don't have to worry about it, but you just gave them power and authority. Because that's the direction that it flows. Whoever says, I'll be responsible for that, then they get authority in that. You say, I don't want to be responsible for my own retirement. Well, then power and authority just flowed to the government. Because they have responsibility for that. You gave up your responsibility, you turned it over to them. And so we need a national health care system. We need to make sure everybody's covered. Blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, there is a price tag to that, and it's your freedom. And somebody sent this to my wife, and she brought it out to me. But it's just a little story about this conservative fellow, you know. And his daughter went away to college, and she's in her, I think she's in her junior year of college. And you know, she's complaining about, you know, the government's not doing enough this. She's been listening to all her professors anyway at college. And, you know, they're not doing enough to help this thing. And our social programs aren't effective. We need to enlarge them, blah, blah. Go through all this stuff, you know, just the typical dribble that you learn in college. Somebody said you're educated as a liberal. You learn as a liberal. You earn as a conservative, you know. But anyway, she's rattling off all this stuff. And she's been indoctrinated with by our college professors. And her dad finally says, you know, he says, what about your friend Mary, you know, she went off same time. How's she doing? She said, well, you know, she's not doing all that good. You know, she parties most of the time, and she shows up late for class, and she only does half-hearted work on her assignments. And she says, what kind of a grade point average are you? Is she pulling down? And she said, well, she's doing well to get a C. And she said, and Dad said, well, now, you work really hard, don't you? She said, oh, yeah, I don't go to any of the parties. You know, I'm diligent. I'm in the library all the time. I'm burning the midnight oil. I'm studying, you know, and I work really hard, I'm getting A's. I say, you know, I've seen your report cards. I know you're getting A's. Now, you say, well, this is what I think we ought to do. I think you ought to go into the academic dean's office. And if you've got a grade point average of 4 and she's got a grade point average of 2, what you need to do is go in the dean's office and offer to give her one of your grade point averages, one of your grade points, so that you'll both have an equal grade point average of 3. And she said, well, I can't do it. I worked hard for this, you know. I worked hard to get my grades. And she loafed, and she played around, and she dated, and she messed up, and she partied, and all. Why should I give her that? She said, well, welcome to the Republican Party. You know, and that's kind of what it amounts to. It's the difference between responsibility and irresponsibility. Now, again, the Bible is clear on a couple of things here, that the authority to rule should not center in any one man. Is that apparent? I mean, moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people, man, able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hate and covetous, place them, so forth. Verse 22, let them judge the people at all seasons. It shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. If thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace. So Moses hearkened unto the voice of his father-in-law, and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel, and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens, and they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way in his own land. Now again, if it's clear that the authority to rule doesn't center in one man, we shouldn't expect the ability to rule to reside in one man. We should expect that more than one person ought to have the ability to rule. Again, now this, you know, this is a slight leap, but you know, I'm a little bit original in my interpretation of the meanings of elder and bishop, and I'm not completely original, but you know, the common Baptist interpretation is elder, bishop, pastor, and shepherd are all synonymous. But there's a couple of places where that just doesn't hold up. But there is no third office in the New Testament of elder. And a simple, and I think the correct way of dealing with that is that an elder, if you look at the qualifications for elders in Titus 1, it talks about elders, but then it switches to bishop. The qualifications, in 1 Timothy 3, the qualifications for a bishop, everything's singular, and the deacons, everything's plural. A bishop, he. The deacons, they. It's real clear. Deacons are always more than one. Bishop's only one. Qualifications for a bishop, deacons are the same. There's only one qualification different, and that's additional qualification for a deacon. The deacon has one more qualification than the pastor has, and that is that his wife knows how to keep her mouth shut. Check it out. It's in there. Almost in those exact words. The wives have to. It's more important for the deacon's wife to know how to keep her mouth shut than anybody else in the church. I mean, it's a very, very important qualification. She has to be able to keep her mouth. Other than that, they're identical. Same thing over in Titus chapter 1. But there says, so is there a third office named elders? No. No, there's no third office. But an elder, an elder is somebody who's qualified to hold office. And you ordain elders. You don't make somebody an elder by ordaining them. You give them an office by ordaining them to the office. But a person is an elder by virtue of their qualifications for office. So deacons are elders, bishops are elders, and there's elders in the church who aren't officers. And sometimes, you know, it says, you know, go to the elders about this thing. Well, does that mean just the ordained elders, or does that mean, you know, the mature, qualified, equipped people in the church? Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other, and I think the context will dictate or circumstances will dictate. You know, that could be the pastoral staff and the deacons, and then a few other people that you just have some confidence in. They've proven themselves. There's no need to have every guy who's qualified as a deacon to be one. Some churches, you know, they do a rotation thing. They rotate people around just to keep it fresh, and that's not always a bad idea either. But anyway, the authority to rule should not center one man. We wouldn't expect just one man to have the ability, all the qualifications to reside in one man. And by the way, since man is a finite creature, he's limited in his ability to rule over everything. Now, God is infinite, so he can rule over everything. But man is finite. And so since I'm finite, that means I can only rule over a certain amount. And the way that you enlarge the amount that you rule over is by allowing people under you to have authority and jurisdiction in areas, and they run that area and then they report to you. It's called macro management, you know. But you can't micromanage anything much bigger than this, and I can't micromanage this. There are some guys who could micromanage this, but I can't even micromanage this. I have to macromanage this. There's things go on. I don't always, you know, every now and then I get news about things, you know. Nobody told me that, you know. But I found, you know, I'm sure everybody thought somebody else told me, but I didn't know there was a leak in the kitchen.
I'm going to have the roof fixed back there because there's some serious problems. But I didn't know. I'm sure everybody thought somebody told me. But I didn't know there was a leak back there in the kitchen. There's a leak back there in the kitchen. Every time it rains, we've had stuff ruined back there in the kitchen because of the water coming. I didn't know that. Everybody's, well, I just figured somebody else told them, you know. Well, again, that's not anybody's problem. That's not, you're wrong, you're bad, you didn't do that, you're fired or anything. It just means that, you know, even in an operation as small as this, you know, things don't always get to you. Because somebody else assumes that somebody else did it. And, you know, I thought they took care of it. Nobody took care of it. And so I don't know. I'm not back there. I'm not omnipresent. I can't know what's being taught in every Sunday school class. How can I be there and know? You trust people, you know, to handle their job responsibility and then go up lines. You have somebody who oversees. The B Sunday School Junior Church. Somebody else oversees the A Sunday School Junior Church. You have people in charge of things. And you trust them to do what they're expected to do, because if they don't, it just ain't going to happen. Now Moses could have said, I've got to judge every situation because I can't trust those people to judge rightly. And I'm sure some of the people made mistakes. But Moses would have cracked under the pressure trying to handle it all. That's the idea. They're bringing him everything. And I mean, the poor guy was exhausted. He was absolutely, completely out of resources by handling all these little things. And Jethro says, you can't do this. No way you can possibly manage it all yourself. Look at Proverbs chapter 11, verse number 14. Proverbs 11, verse number 14. Where no counsel is, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. Chapter 24, and verse number 6. I know that verse has other applications, but think of it in the context of a decentralized government. Proverbs 24:6, by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war, and in multitude of counselors there is safety. Again, other applications, but think of it in terms of decentralizing government. There's safety in decentralizing government. Why is there safety in decentralizing government? Checks and balances. If it's all consolidated in one person, and that person is absolutely dictatorially totalitarian, you know, I mean, just has complete and absolute unchecked, unquestioned power, then the result of that is always going to be abuse of power. So you have checks and balances. That's why I'm accountable to you, just like you're accountable to me. And we're all collectively accountable to one another. Checks and balances. Somebody has to be around and able to say, why? Now, some people ask it too often. But sometimes it needs to be asked. You know, I mean, some people, they question everything. And then other people, you know, they don't ever think to question. But there needs to be a legitimate, you know, it's not, you know, we think you did something wrong, but can you explain this, please? And somebody can't deal with that as taking too much authority on themselves. Now, representative government. All magistrates must answer to the citizens. In a constitutional republic with democratically elected representatives. And that's what we have. We're not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. We have rule of law. The king isn't law. The law is king. But we do democratically elect. I mean, it is 50% plus one that puts somebody in an office. So while we are not a democracy, we have democratically elected representatives. And those democratically elected representatives are supposed to be accountable to the citizens. Now, you wouldn't get that idea, would you? I mean, they talk about it, you know, in September, October, November, but they don't act like it the rest of the time. Congressmen do it every 2 years, and presidents do it every 4 years, and senators do it every 6 years, and judges never do. They don't talk about accountability to citizens. Only when they want to get elected. The rest of the time they do exactly what they please. It's what I believe. I have to answer to my conscience. Magistrates must answer the citizenry. And at the voting booth, look at Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse number 13. You might find this interesting. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse number 13.
take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes. And I will make them rulers over you. And known among your tribes. Again, all government is local. Ultimately, all elections are local. The saying is all politics is local. And that's, you know, known by your tribes. Take you wise men. Again, here we got qualifications. How do you define wise men? It would take a while. And understanding. That would take a while. And known among your tribes. Obviously, everybody could say, yeah, I know him. I've done business with him. He pays his bills. But you know, the worst, it's a funny thing. I mean, it's in some professions, supposedly the absolute worst credit rating of anybody, you know, bankers would tell you, the worst credit risk that a bank will ever take is on what they call a shop preacher. You know, a guy that pastors part-time and works full-time. The worst credit rating in the banks recognize that guy, you know, he's got a little church and he works a full-time job, is the worst credit risk in the country. And as far as in defaulting or reneging on their student loans, the two professions that are the worst for repaying their student loans are doctors and attorneys. You would figure, wouldn't you? You know, now other loans they'll pay them off, but their student loans, the ones that got them the, you know, the profession where they're making all the money, the two professions. I'm not just talking through my hat. This is statistically, you know, I mean, I don't have the proof in front of me, but I'm not just talking through my hat. It's facts. You can go check me out, look it up if you question what I'm saying. You think I'm just making this up as I go? But these are facts. The worst possible default on a loan is going to come from a guy who works part-time, pastors part-time, works full-time, as most likely guy to cheat you and not pay pay his debts back. And the guy most likely to not pay his college loan is a doctor and a lawyer. They drive $80,000 cars, you know, live in $700,000 houses and can't pay their college loans. Yeah. Anyway, does the guy pay his bills? You know, my credit rating is off the map. I mean, seriously, I mean, they don't have, you know, I think the charts go like to 650 or 700 or something like that. You know, and I mean, if you reach those numbers, you've got as good a credit as you can get. And I'm past that. I mean, I'm like way past that. I have debt, but I always overpay every month. I always pay extra and always pay early. I mean, and it's paid off. After X number of years, man, I mean, I can get pretty good interest rates. And my kids can get good interest rates if I co-sign for them. Well, I'm saving them money. You know, now again, I worked hard for those. I mean, it took years to establish that. I started out just like everybody else. My first mortgage was 12% on $19,800. And I had to have 25% down. And when you're making $12,000 a year, it's really hard to come up with that. Pastor a little church in northern Michigan, but you know I managed, you know, and then you just year and say, well, you know, oh, the pastor lives high on the hog. Well, you know, I'm pushing 50. It's about time I had a little cushion. You know, I'm not driving BMWs yet. I don't think I will be either. You know, $45,000 sport utes. That's not going to happen. But you know, you do work for stuff over the years. You know, and you gain something for that. But that's, people know you. Say, well, why in the world would you send somebody to Congress that you can't pay his bills and won't pay his bills? Why would you send him there? If he doesn't pay his bills, what makes you think he's going to care about balancing the state budget or the federal budget? Guy didn't even pay, you know, he's 50 years old and hasn't paid all his college loans yet. Let's send him to Washington. No, let's send him to Afghanistan. That's where I think we ought to send him. No integrity at all. Stupid. You understand how far we are removed from anything like common sense anymore. Take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I'll make them rulers over you. And again, not just one. Not just one absolute supreme grand imperial poobah has authority over everything. But separation of powers. And decentralization. Now, and of course, we all have to answer to God. Look at Hebrews chapter 13, verse number 17. Anybody who's in authority
has to answer to God. Hebrews chapter 13, verse number 17. And by the way, the guy who was over 10 answered. And you understand, this is, sometimes people get ministries in churches and they think that they're the last word. I am. You know, really, I mean, it's my department. I do what I please in my department. Not if I don't approve it. Because, you know, so the captains or the rulers over 10 answered the rulers over hundreds, answered the rulers over thousands, answered to Moses. And it wasn't, well, I've got my 1,000, who cares what Moses says? No, that's not the way this thing works. We're all subject to God, and we all have accountability to somebody. But you understand, that doesn't mean your department, you can just do anything, any old thing, any old way you please. I mean, you've got to be accountable to the people who are trusting you. And I figured people who, you know, come to church here kind of believe what I do. You know, and it's ultimately the final authority and the final responsibility has to reside on someplace. And it stops here and then goes to God as far as the structure of the church. Now, Hebrews 13, 17. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves. And this is the ideal. God help us, it's not always the case. For they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. And of course, verse 7, remember them have the rule over you, have spoken unto you the word of God, whose faith follow, considering the end of your conversation, or their conversation. That is very, very particularly regarding church government. Verse 17 would be expandable into other areas of government. Because verse 7 specifically mentions people who speak unto you the word of God. And it would be whoever gets up here and throws a fit and yells and screams and, you know, and makes a big deal over. You know, it's the weirdest job in the world. Telling the best people that you can, the best people I know, get up every Sunday morning and yell at the best people you know and tell them what's wrong with them. You think I like doing that? Sometimes I get tired of it. I mean, there's a bunch of people, you know, I mean, these people are trying hard to do right, you know, and they got battles and they got problems just like all. And I'm not perfect either, you know, and I struggle against the world, flesh, and devil just like you do. And I got to get up and tell the best people I know what's wrong with them every Sunday. It's not a job you think you want it, but you don't. You got to have a certain kind of personality. And even then, it's not always easy. But obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your soul. You know, really, you see, oh, the pastor just picking on my kids. No, the pastor's watching for their souls when he preaches against wearing Abercrombie. You understand? A kid wears a T-shirt that says Abercrombie and Fitch on it. You know what he's saying? Now, whether he means to say it or not, this is what everybody in the world says. He says, I approve of immorality. I want to be involved in immorality. That's the message he's sending. The message he's sending is, I think immorality is good. It's fun. I want to be involved in it, or I am involved in it. Anybody who's that way, come with me. That's the statement you're making. You know, and I get fuss about those things. People get mad. Well, I'm just watching for their souls. Some teenage girl, you know, from a good home, or teenage boy from a good home. You want your daughters knocked up? You want your boys knocking up girls? You know, well, I'm wearing a T-shirt that says, I am for it. I mean, might as well, you know, in not those exact words, but that's exactly the message. I believe in premarital sex. I am for immorality. You just give a T-shirt that says that. Let's go have unprotected, irresponsible sex. It's fun. Just buy him a T-shirt that says that. It's the same thing. Say, oh, you're picking on her. No, I'm not picking on. I'm watching for their souls. Because they advertise that, somebody's going to take them up on the advertisement. And it's not like it was when you were a girl, Mom. Girls today are just as forward as the boys and more forward than the boys when you were a girl. However hard the boys pushed 20 years ago, the girls push harder than that today. It's pretty wide open. If you don't believe it, you're kidding yourself. You need an education. You need to get caught up on contemporary culture. What they're doing in elementary schools. Married women have problems with sometimes. Obey them, have the rule over you, and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they must give an account. You know, I have to give an account for whether I told you the truth or not. That they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. See, the
you're not going to get the chance to stand up in front of God and complain about me, but I get a chance to stand up in front of God and complain about you. As they that must give an account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief. In other words, the pastor gets to tell the Lord about his flock. Because I'm going to have to give an account. Give an account for your flock. Well, they gave me a lot of joy. They really did. They gave me a lot of joy. Or, oh, they gave me a lot of grief. Why is it? You don't want to say that because, see, that's unprofitable for you. We don't like to think in those terms, but that's representation. I'm going to have to give an account. So I'm accountable to God, but I'm going to give an account. Part of my account is going to be whether I had joy or grief from you in what I did. And that's, I'm just saying, that's the authority thing. Same thing with a parent. You know, the Lord's going to call the parent up there and you say, "How'd you, you know, what about your kids?" He's not going to call the kids up and say, "Tell me all about how bad your parents were." He's going to ask the parent. He's going to ask the parent, "How did your kids respond to you? Did they honor you?" "Well, Lord, I'd rather not say." Okay, well, that's all you have to say. "Oh, yeah, they were a joy. They were a delight. I really enjoyed them. I mean, they gave me pleasure. They never gave me any serious problem. I was glad to have them around. They were the delight of my life." Lord, look over the kids. That's good. You get a reward for that. You're giving an account with joy. You say, "Oh, man, they broke my heart. Just every time I turn around, they're giving me problems." I mean, and that's how it goes with authority. Accountability. We must all answer to God. And accountability in government is found all throughout the Bible. We've just begun to scratch the surface on the matter of representation and accountability. Someone is always reporting to representatives of sovereignty. And it's even true within the Godhead. I mean, Jesus is equal in attributes to the Father, right? I mean, does the Father have any attributes that Jesus doesn't have? Is he endemically or inherently superior? No, not in any way. He and Jesus said, "I and the Father are one." But look at 1 Corinthians 11:3. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse number 3. "But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ." Well, that's not hard to understand. We're not equal, right? The head of every man is Christ. Christ is superior to us. We're not equal to him. "And the head of the woman is the man." Well, that's certainly, I wouldn't argue that the man is superior. Some people might, but I wouldn't argue that the man is superior to the woman. But they're different. And if you would argue that the man is superior to the woman based on the fact that Christ is superior to the man, but there it says the head of the woman is a man and the head of Christ is God. But then Christ is God. The head of Christ is God the Father, but Christ is God altogether. So what is it? Well, in every organization there has to be a chain of command. And the person who answers to the other person doesn't necessarily mean the person who is being answered to is superior, intrinsically superior, but he has superior authority. The man isn't superior to the wife, but he has superior authority. The father isn't superior to the son, but he has superior authority. Why? Because he's the father. That's why it's father-son. Okay. The Lord gave us that arrangement. So, because everybody can understand the son subject to the father. I mean, come on. That's not a hard concept, right? That's deeply ingrained in our consciousness. The child is supposed to be subject to the parent. So that's why those comparisons, those metaphors, similes, actually the realities, but I mean, those terms are used to make sure we get the concept. Now, there's other verses, but it's 10 till. Don't need to be chasing them down, but we'll start looking next week at some other verses about accountability. Accountability in government and where it's found in Scripture. And more about decentralization also next time. And next Sunday the 1st? Is that right? Next Sunday the 1st? Okay. All right, you're dismissed. We'll see you back here in 10 minutes.